This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
A European regulatory environment that includes conditional approval, approval under exceptional circumstances, adaptive pathways to approval, and the PRIME scheme for priority medicines presents challenges to health technology assessment bodies and payers in Europe. Specifically, if there is less data at the time of licensing, there is arguably less certainty about the efficacy and safety of a new medicine, and this could be a challenge for HTAs and for payers. So the question today is, how can the process of demonstrating value to patients and to healthcare systems be improved in the current environment? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. Today, my guests are two experts who will help lead the conversations about value and access at the DIA Euro Meeting 2018 in Basel in April. Dr. Indranil Bakci, Vice President, Value and Access at Novartis Oncology. Welcome, Dr. Bakci.
Thank you.
And Dr. Thomas Zuch, Professor of Pharmaceutical Medicine and Director of the European Center of Pharmaceutical Medicine at the University of Basel. Welcome, Dr. Zuch.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you both for joining us today. Welcome. And let me ask you, Dr. Bakci, the first question. Probably is no exaggeration to say that healthcare systems around the world are financially stressed. But turning to Europe, are there any value and access to medicines challenges that are particularly unique to the European Union?
There's a growing awareness within the European Union that healthcare systems are increasingly vulnerable. Many stakeholders recognize that far-reaching changes are required in order to ensure sustainable patient access to high-quality healthcare. However, there's difference in opinions on how countries should address these economic pressures without limiting access to care. And current approaches often are bits and pieces and put broad patient access to innovative treatments at risk. To optimize the quality of care as well as cost efficiencies, the total healthcare value chain should be addressed. And within the value chain, if there are certain areas that need more address, it's probably the area around specialty care medicines, including oncology. Most of the primary care disease areas are generally well addressed in terms of unmet need. It's the evolving specialty care disease areas, including oncology and rare diseases, which is particularly at risk as healthcare systems in Europe come under increasing cost pressures.
Thank you. Dr. Zuch, what is your perspective on this question? Are there any unique challenges in Europe?
For me, first of all, I think that in terms of efficacy and safety, it is very reasonable to follow a uniform pathway in terms of the endeavors that EMA is pursuing. However, when it comes to HTA, and more specifically when it comes to cost effectiveness, the big problem is that we have a very large diversity of healthcare systems across Europe. These systems are different in terms of processes, in terms of design, and obviously also the level of, or the pricing differences between the different countries make it very stressful in terms of coming to a joint European opinion what the cost effectiveness might be. So in summary, the cost effectiveness part of the HTA will always be very local. And we will have to acknowledge this when we develop drugs and bring them into the European markets.
If I may follow up with you both, I believe there is an organization in Europe called UNETA, the European Network of Health Technology Assessment Agencies. Could UNETA be seen as a bit of a counterpart to EMA, European Medicines Agency, in relation to begin to perhaps harmonize approaches to value and access? Dr. Bakci, you first.
Yes, certainly. So one of the big challenges we have seen as health technology assessment has evolved in Europe and beyond is, unlike EMA, which is a central regulatory agency approving drugs for most of Europe, every country has their own health technology assessment agency, and the data requirements for each of them could be significantly different. So as a provider of pharmaceuticals, companies are often in a position where they're seeking multiple advices from multiple agencies, and it becomes a Herculean task trying to balance all that input and make it part of a development program where the products coming out of the development program would meet the needs of the population. Hence, the notion of having UNETA, which can harmonize the input across different agencies, is certainly a good one. I think even within those, there are challenges in terms of what kind of advice gets incorporated. And in the end, the pricing piece of it still remains outside the scope of UNETA. That discussion needs to happen country by country or member state by member state. But I certainly think through means of UNETA and other similar agencies, there's a way to harmonize the scientific advice that is garnered from HT agencies.
Does that mean in practice that while UNETA stays away from pricing negotiations, UNETA or a body like it could help harmonize the approaches to which data, in particular clinical data, are required, both for regulators and for HTAs, before they make a decision and before any discussion of price occurs? Is that the point?
Yes, absolutely. In terms of efficacy and effectiveness, what's needed, often regulatory agencies focus on efficacy. So in a controlled clinical trial environment, how did the agent perform? What kind of efficacy and safety signals did it send? However, health technology assessment agencies are often looking at effectiveness, which is how does the drug actually perform in the real world setting, not the clinical trial setting. And yes, in situations like that, we do see an agency like UNETA playing a significant role.
Dr. Zuch, your perspective on organizations like UNETA in terms of harmonizing HTA approaches to data?
Well, let's think about what the overall objective is. The overall objective is that we save time and money in making the drugs available to our patients. So whatever helps us to do parallel reviewing of these two aspects, as we just heard, efficacy and safety on one side and effectiveness and maybe cost effectiveness on the other side, whatever can be done to do this in a more parallel processing as opposed to a sequential processing will shorten the time to market access. So if UNETA is able to support this procedure, then I think it's well worthwhile to also follow and invest in the endeavors of UNETA. And maybe someday they will have a probably more official function in that respect.
For a number of years, the European Medicines Agency has brought together pharmaceutical companies and HTAs to hold formal conversations about the clinical data requirements for regulatory approval on the one hand and for HTA approval, on the other hand, of specific new medicines in development. So the question is, have these meetings generally been productive? Have they made a difference to patients? And should these meetings continue? Dr. Bakshi.
Yes, absolutely. Having participated in many of these discussions, my opinion, at least, is these consultations are extremely useful. Drug development, as we all know, is a process that's fraught with uncertainty. And what these processes do, or these consultations do, is help eliminate some of that uncertainty as we go along the journey. So how does this advice become useful? Adoption of the scientific advice in the development plan, and that can result in improvement in the development plan, the type of study design, the endpoints, the length of trial, the population being studied, et cetera, et cetera. On the flip side, if the advice received says there's not enough unmet need or the trial doesn't meet the needs of the population, often termination of the development plan. So in general, again, this is obviously my opinion based on experiences that I have had, we have found the scientific advice to be very useful, very helpful. Again, as I mentioned before, as you do the scientific advice for multiple agencies, trying to align all of them and coming up with a clinical trial program that meets the needs of multiple agencies can be a challenge. But in general, is the advice useful and should we do this going forward? Absolutely. Now, the second part of the question, your question was, does it make a difference to patients? Now, with the assumption that all of this advice, if properly incorporated into the clinical trial program, actually generates medicines that meets the needs of the population, then absolutely yes. In the end, the patients benefit because they get the medicines that they need, and that's helpful for society in general. So my response to your question would be yes.
These meetings with EMA that involve a company and HTAs, given that there are dozens of HTAs across Europe and that only one or two will participate in any given meeting with EMA and the concerned company, how does industry look at the challenge of all the other HTAs that are not in the meeting and who may or may not agree with whatever was agreed at the meeting itself? How can that be addressed?
I think so. That has been the biggest challenge. Number one, trying to get to all of the HT agencies, or at least the majority of them, where their input is important for the development plan. And again, going back to our prior discussion, I think that's where efforts like UNETA, SEED, and so on and so forth, or joint advice between YEMA and the agencies have been useful. Because I think it's also true that as you go on one-on-one advice with each of the agencies, you have a robust discussion on the needs of that agency. But at the same time, if you have multiple agencies in the room, it lets each of them see also what the other one is requesting. And I think in that process, it's easier to get to a common framework or a common requirement that meets the needs of both agencies. I think mostly this can be done either by getting multiple agencies in the room, or having a group like UNETA mediate the discussion.
Dr. Zuch, your perspective on this question, perhaps you've participated in some of these meetings, or perhaps you've heard some feedback.
Actually, I have not participated in such meetings, but in general, I think, as we have already heard, the framework is important. To put up the framework with defining what are the data requirements that we need to collect from the different markets in terms of, for example, real-world data, epidemiological data, etc., and also some common understanding that the methodology to be pursued does make sense if that could be done. But we still have to take into consideration that all business is local, and there will always be local HTA specificities that will address the structure of the healthcare setting and the healthcare payment modality. So yes, in one way, it's good to harmonize, but taking into account that you cannot harmonize 100% of this type of business.
Let me stay with you, Dr. Zuch, for a moment for the next question. And that is a bit of a delicate question that is on the mind of many people, including the public. And that is, what is your view of the relationship between the cost of developing a medicine and the price of that medicine?
Thank you very much for this really very good question, because I really have to address something that a lot of drug makers do not really, really like to hear. That is the question, can we improve the efficiency of the drug development process? Or put it the other way around, how many studies have we performed where we did not get a good result? Because, for example, the study was underpowered. Could we have done better? I think we cannot stand still. We still have to increase the efficiency of the drug development process. And this could be by, for example, expanding on tools like finding even better biomarkers, using genomic biomarkers, using adaptive trial designs to really minimize the amount of studies that we will have to repeat just because we didn't get it right on the first place. So I think there's a need to do this, and that will obviously increase the efficiency. And when we increase the efficiency, we might be asking for lower drug costs. On the other side, again, it's a risky business. Sometimes even if you do the best study, the molecule will not suffice, and you will have to go back to the drawing board and find a new molecule. So we will always have to gear a cost-effectiveness or calculate a cost-effectiveness ratio to see really what is the cost effectiveness of a new drug compared to what we already have on the market. So that will, to some extent, really determine what then the price will be. Clearly, the prices have been, in many cases, very astronomical. Part of it is due to the orphanization process that we are observing by having smaller and smaller market groups that we will treat. But nevertheless, I think we really have to find a way where the public will not be outraged and not be willing to accept the price of a product. It's still a tough question and a tough process.
Let's see what Dr. Bakci has to say about that. Dr. Bakci, your point of view on this question and Dr. Zuch's comments.
I completely agree with Dr. Shuk that the drug development process does need to get more efficient in terms of whether it's the costs or how we address the uncertainty in the process. And there are, you know, with the advent of science and technology, there are, you know, ways that the drug development process can become more efficient. As was mentioned, precision medicine and use of biomarkers to target subpopulations where there's a higher likelihood of patient response can eliminate not just inefficient trials, but also the traditional waste that's present in traditional trial and error medicine. So with the advent of precision medicine, biomarkers, things like gene therapy, we will see more focused trials and as a result, more focused treatments being available. We're also using, you know, new technologies such as IBM Watson and beyond to essentially create clinical trials which are very targeted, which have higher likelihood of success and actually focus on the population that has the highest chance of response. So that part I agree with. Now, determining the price of a medicine, that's broader, as you know, than just the cost of goods. In fact, the cost of goods or the cost of trials doesn't really have a direct impact on the price of medicine. When determining a medicine's price, pharmaceutical companies and industry would take many different factors into consideration. The therapeutic area, the prevailing unmet need in the therapeutic area, the medicine's impact on patients and their diseases, and what other treatments are available, its potential to impact quality of life, its potential to extend life, its potential to reduce other healthcare costs, and of course, in the end, affordability is something that we take into consideration. So in the end, it's a question of what's the unmet need in that particular therapeutic area? What does the standard of care look like? What's the incremental value that this new treatment will bring to society? And what kind of reward can be given for that value? That's the basic process on how pharmaceuticals or medicines are priced. The cost of drug development is a component of it, but it is certainly not a driving component on how medicines are priced.
I wonder if that is a point, Dr. Baichi, where you and Dr. Zuch differ. In other words, Dr. Zuch seemed to be saying that if the cost of drug development declines due to greater efficiency, then the price of medicines will be able to be lower than it is in some cases today. You seem to be saying that the cost of developing a medicine is one of many other factors. And so are you in disagreement with Dr. Zuch on that point?
I think we're not in disagreement. Maybe we are taking different perspectives towards the same issue. Because I'm not sure cost of drug development and pricing of medicines have a linear relation. Will reducing the cost of drug development have an impact on pricing? It may, but it's hard to say that it will directly result in, you know, reduction in prices, because in the end, how industry does their trials and how efficient they are and how they plan their resourcing, it's up to them, right? So being inefficient in your system shouldn't drive prices high. So my point is, pricing of medicines is based on the value that they bring to society. Reducing the cost of drug development will have an impact, but may not be linear.
Dr. Zuch, any rejoinder to that response from Dr. Baichi?
As an academic, I can take a bit of another stance as well. For example, taking into consideration that we have learned a lot about the molecular biology, molecular genetics of pathways and targets, etc., I do believe that we will see in the next 10 years a lot more of drug repositioning and repurposing, just by the very fact that we already have a lot of molecules. We have a lot of drugs on the market that when we developed them, we did not even know why did they work, but now we understand that they do have effects which are to be used in other indications. My guess will be that in the next 10 years, we will have consortia. This could be companies, this could be private-public partnerships, these could be completely academic institutions, which are starting to look at available molecules, old molecules, which are off patent and used in indications that we would not have thought that they would be working. Now, the question really is, I mean, should they be used at the local or the generic price, or should there be a new way of maybe giving a little bit more and adding up the value added of finding a new indication? That is to be seen, but has to be discussed with policymakers how we can find a way to do that, because obviously you will have to submit, even in such a case, probably an NDA, if you don't want to do this whole thing in an off-label setting. So we will see a lot coming in the next 10 years in this area.
As we all know, the European Medicines Agency will likely move to Amsterdam by early 2019. And so the question is, will this move have a negative impact on patient access to therapies in Europe? If so, what steps should be taken and by whom to protect patient access to therapies? Dr. Baichi.
This is certainly something that's taken up a significant amount of discussion in the past year. As we know, the EMA will relocate to Amsterdam. So are there concerns? I mean, if it's going to relocate anywhere, Amsterdam is probably as good as a choice it can be in terms of whether it's the language that's spoken or the availability of staff. That shouldn't be a problem. There are some challenges in terms of how many of the existing staff would move to Amsterdam. And as a result, there may be loss of personnel, which might slow down assessment of applications and some of the other important duties that EMA does. So that could be one challenge. The other challenge also is the move is actually happening in a very tight time frame. So in terms of having facilities available and being able to actually do the work, that could pose a significant challenge. So I think in general, some of the challenges that would happen are operational, and it depends how well they're managed. But in the end, in terms of the location moving from London to Amsterdam, I don't see any major issues.
So you don't think industry can or should take any particular actions to protect patient access due to the move?
I think what industry will need to do is essentially build in longer time frames and be receptive to requests that might be coming from EMA, given this change in move. So certainly the industry needs to be ready and be prepared to deal with the move as and when it happens, and it will cause some immediate disruption, which will require extra effort to meet. But in the end, this should be manageable.
Dr. Zuch, do you have a point of view on the EMA move to Amsterdam as an academic in Switzerland outside the European Union?
I think we already heard what the solution is. It needs good management of the moving process to find ways of not losing good personnel, but also finding new personnel. Certainly, the whole thing will come at a cost for the time of the overlap, because I don't think that there's going to be a full stop on one side and, you know, they're going to wait until the other starts working. But we need a good transition, and this will put a lot of stress on a lot of people. But I am very positive in terms of assuming that this will not really slow down the market access process.
We've come to the end of our time together. Many of the topics you all discussed today will surface again at the Euro meeting in Basel in April, and we look forward to that. So, Dr. Bakci, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your insight.
Thank you for the opportunity to participate in this conversation.
Dr. Zuch, thank you very much as well for participating today and providing your point of view from the academic sector. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both for your time today. For the DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.